Well, there was an uproar when funds for the National Partnership Agreement for Remote Housing failed to appear in the federal budget for most states. While money was committed to the Northern Territory, other partners such as Queensland have yet to receive their matching funds. Delivery of remote housing has been criticised in the past for under-delivery and poor design. Kieran Wong is a director of Cox Architecture and an adjunct senior research fellow at Monash University. He says, we already have guidelines about what works in remote housing. They just need to be properly implemented.
Over the last sort of 30 years, there's been an ongoing and cumulative research project that's been coordinated by a number of groups, but in particular Health Habitat, who've been tracking a series of, in a sense, new builds and renovations and post-occupancy evaluations in Indigenous housing across many remote communities in Australia. So we actually have quite a considerable statistical basis to understand what does work and what doesn't work. We don't need to be inventing or searching for novel techniques when we have so much of the evidence to hand. So the National Indigenous Housing Guide, at the basis of which was developed through, I think, about 15 or 20 years of research compiled across communities by Health Habitat on everything from health hardware, such as showers and laundries, to the design of living spaces and outdoor spaces and the arrangement of communities. So there's a considerable amount of evidence, and the danger, in a sense, is that much of this has been either forgotten or is not mandated in the delivery of new housing.
When the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission was in place, was there a closer focus on what actually worked in the delivery of these programs?
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that there are still a number of agencies since the demise of ATSIC that have maintained a focus on, you know, what does and doesn't work. The challenge in a way is that it still remains relatively uncoordinated at a Commonwealth level. And so what we don't have at the moment is a sort of a continuous and updated set of guidelines to assist people in the design and delivery of remote Indigenous housing. And, you know, it's suffered in many respects from a sort of pendulum swing of policy, you know, to and from either local community engagement and delivery away to a sort of centralised decision-making process in Canberra. And every time one of that pendulum swings backwards and forwards, you know, pots of money sort of come and go. You know, we've often been faced with short-term targets as a result of a politically calibrated program, as opposed to just a continually evolving housing model, which we have in mainstream Australia.
So there's no certainty when it comes to funding of remote Indigenous housing.
Yeah, and that's the biggest challenge at the moment, is that the partnership agreement that has run for the last 10 years has effectively wound up this year. The Commonwealth has agreed to extend funding in the Northern Territory for 5 years to match the Northern Territory's commitment to Indigenous housing and remote housing, but it hasn't done it to any of the other states or territories yet. And so there's considerable uncertainty as to how those other states are going to be able to fund in a clear and ongoing way both the construction of new dwellings and the repairs and maintenance of existing dwellings within those communities.
So you mentioned there being a problem of short-termism, of very tight turnarounds. Often, many of the public only hear about Indigenous housing when there is some sort of crisis, perhaps some sort of expose around poor living conditions or the fact that housing has not been delivered within certain timelines. So does that go back again to really just conditions of ongoing uncertainty?
Yeah, it relates primarily to, you know, what's been very well described by many people over many years in Indigenous housing, and probably best described by someone called Paul Phileros, who was an architect, one of the partners at Health Habitat, the kind of Indigenous housing cycle. So there is this sort of long process which occurs where there is a build-up of need because of a lack of funding or a lack of funding certainty. That need is suddenly exacerbated, as you say, by some expose. Suddenly there's a Four Corners report and everyone's sort of shocked and outraged, and we end up with an intervention. An intervention then sets some sort of radical target which says we need to quickly reduce or increase the number of bedrooms, reduce overcrowding, increase bedrooms in communities by a certain date. To meet that date, the only realistic way of achieving that kind of target is to, invent a kind of innovative delivery model, which is highly expensive, sometimes untested. They're delivered, and then there's a lack of kind of follow-through on maintenance, and we end up back at the beginning of the circle or the cycle again, where a great need starts to emerge as a result of those housing failures. And so that cycle sort of spins and has spun, in a sense, around in great arcs Indigenous housing for many decades now.